head from Mexico who fled, who was in charge of the cover-up of the case of the 43. That's where we are right
Amazing.
Now.
Amazing. Oh, my God. Okay. Camilo Perez-Bastillo, you're going to have to come back. We have to keep this dialogue going and the work that you're doing. And that's happening with Witness at the Border is really the life and death work that we should all be aware of. Thanks for spending the time. We'll talk to you soon. Please stay
safe. Thank you so much, Dennis. Please join us, witnessattheborder.org, and the Facebook group. You can join Witness at the Border. Thank you.
Witness at the Border. And you are listening to Flashpoints on Guess What on Pacifica Radio. This is the People's Radio Network, and we're proud of it. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
And that wraps it up for another episode of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Senior producers are Miguel Gavilan Molina and Kevin Pina. Technical director is Mike Biggs. Special thanks to producer and engineer Rod Akil. For previous episodes, go to kpfa.org or flashpoints.net. For questions or comments, email dennis@kpfa.org. Thank you for listening. You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, also heard at translator K220HR Hood River at 91.9 FM and translator K282BH in Philomath at 104.3 FM. And we're streaming at the top of our lungs.
Times Like Now is an interview program. Interviews with interesting people who are doing cool stuff. And my name is Trevor Collins. You can find past episodes of Times Like Now wherever you get your podcasts. My guest today is Liv Warfield. Liv began her musical career in Portland, Oregon, singing karaoke. She started a band, did some recordings, and one of those recordings wound up in the hands of none other than Prince. A short time later, she began singing and touring and recording with Prince and the New Power Generation. Interview with Liv Warfield on this episode of Times Like Now. Hello, Liv. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. You are a busy lady. You are all over the place. You're in Chicago on a Teatro Ziazzini.
Pronounce that right? Close, but it's Teatro Zanzani, and it is like love, chaos, comedy, and dinner, and not just that. It's in over 100-year-old circus tent. There are aerial artists, vocalists, performers. It's pretty out of control. So I tell people, don't expect anything. Just come to the show because it's insane. It's probably something you've never really experienced. It's pretty awesome.
Sounds a bit like the circus event in Vegas that they do, the
Cirque du Soleil thing.
Cirque du Soleil.
Yeah, kind of. It has some elements of that, but I think this is obviously, for us, it's a very intimate setting. So it's like these amazing performers and circus performers and athletes and aerial artists. They're like literally 10 feet from you. So it's very up close and personal and pretty cool.
In a 100-year-old circus tent with dinner.
Yeah, dinner, chaos, comedy, the cast and crew, even the servers are part of this whole art, basically, I call it, and theatrics. It's pretty cool. It's a great experience.
Very exciting.
Yeah.
So for those who do not know, I'm going to jump back, go way back into the beginnings of your musical journey and how you wound up behind Prince on stage as part of New Power Generation. originally out of Peoria, Illinois, and you were on your way in the sports world in track and field, and you were on your way to the Olympics.
Yeah.
Through Portland, Oregon.
Yeah. That was the goal.
So, and you had a scholarship or something to come out to Oregon.
Yeah.
And run the track out there. And while there, you began singing karaoke.
Yes.
Where did you sing karaoke at? I know Portland, and where did you sing at back in those days? And what years were that?
Oh, whoa. Okay, so I want to say 2000, 2001, the Ambassador. And before the Ambassador, forgive me, there was one more place that I went to constantly. It's right off of Burnside.
Chopsticks.
Not Chopsticks.
Okay, mm-hmm. I went there.
It's across the street from Doug Fir.
Okay. I can't think of that one either.
But that was
I know the place.
That was the first place I would constantly go. I tell people because I grew up in the church, never sang in the church, but I was just really sheltered for good reason. And when I finally, one of my teammates was like, well, you know, you can go to this bar and you can go sing if you really want to sing all that bad. And I was like, wait, what? There's a bar you can actually go to and pick songs and sing. And that's how it all started. Like, I got the taste for that and it was over.
So you started a band with some of the locals in Portland. What was the name of that band?
It was Money and Lovin'.
Money and Lovin'.
Yes.
A romantic.
Yes, it was dope. It was like a hip-hop project, hip-hop and soul. And I just wanted to be a part of anything, like live music, anything, live instrumentation. I just wanted to be a part of it.
So you started playing around town, started getting some shows, and then somehow PDX Pop Now in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
Your band did a Stones cover.
Yes. Uh-huh. Gimme Shelter.
That was the Gimme Shelter tape.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And how did that wind up in Prince's hands?
At the time, Prince was looking for another background vocalist. One of the vocalists was leaving, and her name is Marva King. Bless her for that opportunity. I met her randomly in Atlanta. I was doing a gig for one of my albums, the Embrace Me album that came out in 2006. Anyway, I think it was around the time where I was like, okay, I'm finished. This is probably like the last show I'm going to do because this independent thing is just way too hard. Especially if you're not having the right backing that you needed. Anyway, so I saw this lady. She just looked like beyond an artist. I don't know. She just had this thing about her. Anyway, she sat in the van next to me and her name was Marva, and I ended up getting a call from her like three weeks later after I did the gig, and she's just like, well, Prince is interested in looking for another background singer. Do you have any video you can send? I was like, first off, I'm not sending any video. Second off, I'm not the person for that job because I mean, I couldn't keep up and do anything like that. So I didn't think that they were sending anything, and so they end up finding a video that I have, which was the Gimme Shelter video, and they sent it to him anyway. And then I got a call back from her 3 months later, and she's just like, Prince wants to talk to you. And I'm like, wait, what? You guys sent the video? Okay. This is like beyond what I could even imagine. And I remember I was in Arkansas doing a gig, and I was getting a full weave done. I was in the beauty salon chair. She was doing my hair. And they were like, you're going to get a call from an unknown number. And I'm thinking like, wait, what? And it was him. We had a conversation. He said, I love your voice. Do you want to go somewhere warm? I'm thinking like, wait, what? He's like, we can go to LA. And I just sing with us. And I was like, well, okay. And then after that, I went to Paisley Park and I got auditioned. Whatever you would call that, an audition. And the rest is craziness.
The experience in Los Angeles when you, the first time, was that a rehearsal? Was that an audition? Or did you just step out onto a stage and back him up?
Well, the first time, the LA situation didn't happen. I met him first at Paisley Park. So I couldn't do the LA thing, but Mayhem at Paisley Park was just perfect. I waited all day at the hotel, and like she said, just wait to get the call. I got the call, and he just was the first person at the door. Like, you would think, like, you would have, like, security and, like, all these kind of people greeting at the door. No, it was him. He asked me if I was hungry. I was like, no.
Did he make pancakes?
No, he didn't make... No, he knew I was nervous as all get out, though. He was like, relax, let's just talk, you know, let's just have a conversation. And he wanted to know who I was, you know, he really wanted to know who I was. And then after that, we sang in front of a piano, and it was Shelby. I saw Shelby. I met Shelby first, and then Marva was there. And he just, first thing was I went into the studio. Now, you talk about, like, nervousness. It was like I sang in the studio first. It wasn't like we were sat behind the keys first. We sat in the studio room. And I started singing, and he was smiling. And, I was starstruck for a minute. I had to pull myself together because I was like, God, how did you put me here in this position? You know, I tell people your mind and what you believe, what you want so bad in your heart, right? Those things really can manifest even when you're not thinking about it. And yeah, I couldn't believe I was there at Paisley, and he was just loving as can be, very. And after that, I think I did the LA show, and that was my first show. And it took a minute for him to trust that I could do the gig, because I would be crazy to, like, not really give it a full try. You know, I never sang backgrounds with any other girls who are super, super professional, like Shelby and Marva. It was just, everything went really fast, but I was determined, and he saw that in me. He saw it.
Yeah, the first time on stage, backing him up, I mean, in rehearsals maybe even, were you helped by Marla and, I mean, and Shelby? Did they say, okay, here's how we do this, or were you just thrown into the den?
Both. Both. You got to be able to keep up. That's one thing with Prince, and I had to realize that quick. The first time in LA when I sang with them before we were getting ready to rehearse the three shows that he did at the Nokia Theater, it was my first big shows. I think we were singing the Sly and the Family Stone song, and I tell everybody this. He asked me to sing, and Marvel was like, girl, you better sing out. Like, stop playing around. Like, he could get somebody else. And, you know, he kind of walked away kind of like, this girl ain't got it. And then I really belted it out then. And then he turned around with this George Jefferson walk back, and he had a smile on his face like, okay, like, there she is. Like, okay, I don't have to bring anybody. I don't have to hire anybody else. Like, you got it. Like, and then I think it was him saying, like, look, I see something in you, but I'm not going to sit here and, like, push you, like, keep telling you you got it, you know? So it took a minute. It wasn't anything that I had, like, overnight. Like, I had to learn how to sing and how to perform and how to listen to cues, and more so listen to music, listen to the musicality of everything going on. And then just learning how to be an artist in his world, right? Because his world is his world. not everybody can handle that. And I just was an open book, so I wanted to absorb everything. And that first show,
yeah,
was
you went from
crazy.
You went from Portland, Oregon, to the top of the mountain overnight. I mean, that's a shock. I'm sure it was. I can imagine.
Yeah, it was. But then again, like I said, I was kind of like Spike Lee movie. You know, like how it's just a rolling scene, and I'm just looking at everything. Just like, oh my God, what is going on? You know, and it's exciting. It was so exciting. So exciting.
And how many years did you tour with New Power Generation?
Six years, 6 or 7 years.
Did you do recording studio stuff as well?
Absolutely, yes. Mm-hmm.
What albums, for everybody to know, what albums were you on?
Lotus Flower, let's see, Welcome to America album that just came out.
Excellent. That's incredible.
There's a lot of stuff. decent amount of stuff, basically. Yeah.
Now, he's gone on to, or had gone on to produce an album for you. What album was that?
This was unexpected. I say this with the utmost respect, is that he executive produced it, which he allowed me and my band to produce the record on our own. He definitely wanted to see what I could do, because I challenged him all the time and he challenged me all the time. Like, okay, I had to really prove myself to him in a way to where he would want to like help me with this record, you know. Before Why Do You Lie came out, he was just like, what songs do you have? And I was like, I got a lot of stuff. And he was like, okay, well, whatever. And then I put out Why Do You Lie on my own first, and he was like, oh, okay. So what do you want to do? You got more songs like that? I was like, I sure do. And he asked me also if I wanted to record the album at Paisley Park or in Portland. So I chose Portland just because I think he knew that's where the magic was for me. And he knew, he trusted me, you know, and I definitely called him back and forth. I'd send him stuff back and forth, and he would give me ideas of what do you think I should do and stuff like that. I think he really knew that I wanted to do this on my own. Because I wanted to prove to myself, you know, what I could possibly do. And he was there every step of the way. Every step.
That's an amazing journey and story to have that kind of relationship.
Absolutely.
With that kind of person.
Yes.
And that kind of professional performer. If you are just tuning in, I'm speaking with Liv Warfield about her time as a backup singer and recording artist with Prince, as well as her solo musical career on Times Like Now. Now, I saw that performance you did on Fallon. Why Do You Lie? What year was that? That was the first time. I think that was the first time I ever saw you on stage.
That was 2014. Why do you lie? Why do you lie?
That was an incredible performance.
Thank you.
You are an amazing, amazing singer. I saw such, I don't want to say influence from Prince, but certainly his professionalism and maybe something of his aura rubbed
wow.
off on you and your ability to just project greatness. You ruled that stage.
Blessings. Yeah, we had a lot of rehearsal. He was there helping us with our rehearsal. And
really, he was there for rehearsal?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We rehearsed a lot at Paisley Park. The NPG horns and us, and we really worked on that show, which I'm grateful for, because, you're around him that long. You better learn to pick something up. You know what I mean? You better learn performance. Something. And I'm telling you, I was studying. I was studying hard.
The song Mantra. Tell me about this song. I saw this video and it's pretty dynamic.
Run away from it all. Oh Lord, run away.
Thank you.
There's a fellow playing guitar that seems to be a bit inspired by Prince as well.
My brother Ryan Waters.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Ryan, I owe a lot to. Ryan wrote The Blackbird on the last album, Unexpected. Yeah, Ryan's pretty amazing. Anyway, we wrote Mantra maybe, when did we write that? 2015? 2016, I believe. It took me a while to really finish that because I was really going through a really hard time figuring out who I was as an artist. Then, you know, as artists, we love to evolve and change, and I just wanted to keep evolving, but my mind was in a lot of different places, and by the time I finished it, Prince had passed, and there was just a lot going on, and I wrote it to constantly remind myself, like, okay, you could choose this path or you could choose that path, but regardless of what's going on, you still will see the light of day. Like, you have to know that. Everybody's path is different, but you have to know and wake up that it's going to be different. So definitely that's, I wrote Mantra for that reason.
Impressive. That's, I was really fond of that song. I was watching a bunch of videos and also came across your performance of, Never Take the Place of Your Man.
Oh, yeah.
And something more recent, the Alice in Chains tribute that you were a part of in Seattle.
Yes, yes, yes.
How did you get into that show?
How did that whole thing... There's a lot of relationships that developed. First off, I started a band with Nancy Wilson of Heart in 2015. So with that relationship, and that was stupid incredible... I cultivated relationships with Susan Silver, who I believe manages Alice in Chains and stuff. And she had seen me do some work with Nancy, and then they asked me if I wanted to be a part of it. And I was like, oh, heck yeah. But Alice in Chains is just so incredible that, you know, I'm trying to figure out how I can bring myself to the song, just bring me to it and respect the fans as well. Because, you know, people are used to different people singing and they'll look at me like, okay, wait, what? So I really wanted to have fun with it, and the band was incredible, and it was really inspiring to be a part of it. And Alice in Chains, they loved it. As long as they loved it, I loved it too. So that was dope. It was really dope.
Yeah, and tell me more about Nancy Wilson and the band. Tell me the name.
Roadcase Royale.
Roadcase Royale. Did you do shows, or did you do recording, or both?
Yeah, we recorded an album, and then we did some shows. We toured with that band for a minute, and we opened up for Bob Seger every once in a while, I think for a short stint. But that was a really great project. Like, Nancy and I wrote some really cool songs, and the band, Dan, Ben and Chris and Ryan, it was really a great project. And I hope we visit it again at some point, but it was really fun.
Yeah, I was watching some performances of that as well, and seems like you guys get along very well.
Yes.
And really seem to gel on stage pretty well. Is also, where would people find you online, and maybe some more information about the teatro program. Is that going to be traveling, or is that solely in Chicago?
No, it's only in Chicago. The tent is on like the 13th, 14th floor, the top of a hotel. So it's not going anywhere. It's at the Cambria Hotel. The show changes, I think every 6 months, 4 or 6 months. So the cast changes, and it's always new. So it's always going to be here. So I'll be there till January 9th. And I'll be doing that for a while. And then people can find me on Instagram. It's my name, Liv Warfield, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all of those social needs information.
What are you working on? Are you doing any recording right now besides what you're doing with the teatro? Are you doing any performances of your albums or working on new material now?
Yeah, I just released an album with a Parisian producer called, it's a project called June Moon. We just released it in August. It's a pretty amazing album. I really, really love it.
What was that name again?
It's called June Moon, J-O-O-N-M-O-O-N. And that's a pretty incredible project. Like, I really, really dig it a lot. And then I'm releasing an album next year, so I've been busy, but for good reason, and I'm thankful, because we all know what we've been going through, and so I just had to really be gracious and thank God that I'm able to take that energy and put it into a creative space. You know, this is my DNA. This is how I live. This is how I breathe. Is through music. So I'm thankful I'm able to put that energy in these kind of spaces. You know.
Yeah, the last year and a half or so has been obviously very challenging, and a lot of people have come up with new hobbies, and
yes.
And maybe maybe you making a new album. That's how people deal with things, is express. Are you recording in Portland?
No. I've been recording a lot in Chicago and in Dallas and different places, so I've just been trying to figure out what that voice is. I kind of take my time. A lot of people are like, when is the album coming out? It's coming. I just want to make sure that my message is clear and my third eye is open, and you know, I have the right things to say at the right time. So yeah, this next project is, I'm very good. I'm going to be very proud of it. I'm excited about it. Very excited.
I have a couple questions about Paisley Park itself.
Sure.
Tell me a little bit about the insides of that place. I mean, is this like something like Willy Wonka's, you know, factory or something, is what I've always imagined it. Something similar. What's some of your take away from that place?
It's definitely not Willy Wonka. It's a world of its own. It's a safe haven. It's a safe space. It's like my home. It's the most beautiful creation of safety of any musician that could even step in this world. Like, he honors pretty much every musician he's worked with. There's clouds, there's, I don't know, it's just this euphoria of like creation of whatever you want. You feel it when you walk through the doors. It's colorful, it's rainbows, it's flowers, it's everything. It's honestly, it's just a creative space, and you have to go in there and yourself to visit, because people always want to know what it's like. But I don't know, Paisley's different. It's hard for me to describe, because it means different things for everybody. So for me, it's just a safe space, like really, like, let go. And you know, it's different because he's not here, but the energy is still very much there. You could see the creation, you could see his outfits, you could just kind of sort of see where his mind was. Like, he could do anything in anything in any capacity that he wanted to do there. You know, I think he wanted that for every artist. So you go there and you feel it when you walk in the doors, trust me.
I read recently that the guitar maker that made over 30 guitars, including the cymbal guitar for Prince, is here in Bellingham, Washington, where I am.
Okay.
And I unfortunately do not know the fellow's name. Actually, I did find it. Andy Beach. Is his name. And I thought that was an interesting article that I read, that all those amazing guitars, most of them, were made here in the Pacific Northwest.
Yes, that's amazing. That's great.
And I also saw that the fellow that cracked the safe in the in Prince's vault, also from the Pacific Northwest here, that got access into there.
Oh, wow.
Well, I sure do appreciate your time.
Thank you.
And thank you so much. Now, we have a similar friend in Michael Baker. Did you ever do any performing with Michael?
Michael! Oh, my God. It was so long ago, and I love Michael's spirit. Like, I really absolutely love him. It's been, like, years, I'm telling you, years, since we've, like, seen each other and done stuff. Oh, I love
it. Did you two perform together or record or sing together?
I don't know if we've ever had the chance to do that. And if we have, I'm sorry, baby, I can't really remember, but I know that I did some work with him before, like video or something like that.
Right.
Yeah. He's lovely, very lovely.
Well, we will all be looking for you on Facebook and Instagram, as well as all
Thank
over the
you.
YouTubes and following your career as you go forward. Thank you so much, Liv Warfield, being a guest today. I really
Thank
appreciate
you.
Your time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for tuning in to the program today. Past episodes of Times Like Now can be found wherever you get your podcasts. Special thanks to Anthony Karras for audio technical support today, as well as the letter J, Cody Robertson, for original theme music. My name is Trevor Collins. I can be reached, trevor@timeslikenow.com. Thank you once again for listening, and I look forward to speaking with you all next time.
Andy Warhol looks a scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week are Mariana Ramirez. She's the director of the Jordan Schnitzer Museum of Art at Portland State University, and Edmund Holmes. He's an artist and designer, and they're here to talk about Black Lives Matter Artist Grant Exhibition, which runs now through April 30th at PSU. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus, Mariana and Edmund.
Thank you for